Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, sir.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself.
My name is...
What?
My name is...
Dr. Dre.
Yeah.
Sir Robert Fortune.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Yeah, almost time.
It is.
Time to make it do what it do.
Let's go.
Hey.
You sound like Kool-Aid Man. Hey. No, that's Fat Albert. I'm thinking something else. Man, hey,
yeah.
Welcome to Talking Sports with the 12th Man. We're doing a little post-NFL thing here. We're ready to get this party started. A lot of things to discuss. Again, I'm not going to go too hard on Rob because, you know, first and foremost, he's my friend, man. So, again, but we're going to have some fun. We're going to talk a lot of things, and we're going to have some fun, as we always like to do. So we got West Coast, East Coast, South, North. We got all things covered, as we always like to do on this January 22nd day in January of 2019. So let's kick it out, Mr. JQ. We always start out the show with you. How are you feeling, sir?
Oh, man, I can't complain. I'm doing all right. Like I was telling y'all, I'm watching the Serena here in the Australian Open. I'm 5-2, but you could have closed it out and she's not playing well right now. So I'm good. How y'all doing?
We good. Clearly, like you said, I got tennis covered too, the Australian Open as always, so we'll check in on that as well. Rob,
what's the real reason
okay,
why you watch the Serena?
Hey, listen, I like to see good sport, but she is wearing the Serena outfit and I'm not gonna hate on her at all. God almighty.
Truth be told, man.
No,
Rob just exposes it.
Yes, he went down the whole truth, so he had to get the whole truth out of
her. Why is he watching tennis? Serena? Rob,
hey, same hey. No lies here.
Oh, man.
Rob, how you feeling, bro? I done asked you like 2 times.
Oh, I don't know.
Three times.
I think you guys know how I'm feeling. I'm still a little beat up from Sunday, but but it's all good. Ready to get the party started.
Yeah, I know.
Curtis and Gary, we'll check in with you guys in a quick second, as you always have to do, man. So, again, let's throw out the numbers, as always, 424-243-9519 is the number to call into the show. Follow us on Twitter at the number 12, THMAN Sports. And then last but not least, go to Facebook.com/ 12th Man Sports, or if you type in Talking Sports with the 12th Man, you will find us there as well. Normally we start with the Oregon Sports Report, but I guess we're going to kick right into the show because we don't have too many topics. I know everyone's been kind of – it's been a long week, so we're going to let the show kind of go pretty quickly. But I guess the main topic and we're going to talk about is are the Saints being sore losers for continuing to complain about the missed interference call. So, Rob, as the – part of Saints Nation, I'm going to let you kind of start it off, and then JQ, West Coast, and I'll kind of finish it up too, but go ahead, sir, and you can kick us off, man. Therapeutic.
Well, if you ask me that question, I think the fans are, but I don't think the team is. I think the team has handled it pretty well, the team and the players, but obviously the fans are not letting it go, and now you got to turn me down into warm. What's that?
Is that you? Are you in the group of fans as well?
Well, I think if anything you know about me, I'll never blame an official for a loss, and so even in this particular situation, was it a bad non-call? It's probably the most blatant non-call that I've ever seen in sports. And do I think it would have had an impact on a game. I mean, if the call was made, I think there's a 98% chance that the Saints win the football game. There's no doubt about it. With that being said, I'm never the type to blame a loss on an official. The Saints had other opportunities they did not capitalize on that could have won the game. Even early in the game, they settled for too many field goals, which turned around and cost them. Obviously, and you can credit the Rams' defense for that too. And then also, even on that last drive, I mean, you can blame Sean Payton for some play calling on first down there inside the 20-yard line. They could have ran the ball and ran some more clock as opposed to throwing the ball on first down. So, I mean, there are some things that you can blame the Saints on as well. But I would never blame the officials for a loss, even though the Saints get that call, they win that football game. There's no doubt about it in my mind. But I wouldn't blame it totally on the officials. And so I'm going to say, for the most part, I believe the fans are being sore losers, but I don't think the team is. I think the team is handling it respectfully because you don't hear the players and the coaches still talking about the situation.
Wow. All right. JQ?
Yeah, I can't make that point any better than that. You know, you can't sue the NFL. You can't petition them to replay the game. Like, you can't do that. In the aftermath of that call when you're watching that game, I agree. That's the same thing. Why would you not run the ball there and make them kill the timeout? But if everything else been equal, you missed your opportunities. You know, had two opportunities to get in the game. You got in the red zone, kicked two field goals, and you could have got at least one touchdown. You know, you can make that a totally different game. You give up the fake punt, something that you would do. So you would think that the Saints would be on alert for it, but they weren't. And they allowed that drive to continue and kind of changed the momentum of that game. And Drew Brees with that interception, even with pressure in his face, you know, they had the opportunities to stop the Rams. With that being said, the fans in the immediate aftermath, if it was my team, if that happens too, yeah, you can't console me at that moment. You know, after what happened last year with that crazy play with Minnesota with Diggs, and then that happened where a dude gets drilled in the head and the ball is still behind him and looking at it. I've never seen anything like that. We have that many officials, supposedly an all-star crew for the playoffs, missed that call. Once you 3 days past it or 2 days past it and you talk about throwing the league, you know, putting up billboards and all the kind of wild stuff, it's like, okay, Saints fans, I get you. Y'all got cheaters. Y'all got hoes. But you got to let it go. It's over at this point. And we all know you got hoes. You don't have to keep talking about it or proving it. We all know you got hoes. But you can't keep it going. It's not going to take the fact that it's over at this point and you kind of got to let the season flush.
Wow. West Coast. Curtis Gary.
Well, it is tough when it comes down to a play like that. And, you know, yes, there were plays for both teams left on the field. But I will say this. The Saints absolutely have nothing to be ashamed of. They played a good game. They had a great season. They played a strong team, you know, and battled. Both teams battled as hard as they possibly could. So my hats off to both of the teams. I think they played a good, you know, are the fans a little bitter? Of course they are, and rightfully so. When you see something like that, just like we do on this show, you know, we talk about things and we're passionate about our individual teams. So yes, I can definitely see how the fans would be bitter about a play like that costs, their team potentially the opportunity to go to the Super Bowl, and you know, for Drew Brees to be able to even, you know, cement that legacy that he's already made, even, you know, and go further with it with potentially another Super Bowl. So yeah, I can understand that. I did want to say, wasn't there a some sort of a lawsuit, and was that brought on by the fans or was that brought on by the team against the NFL?
The fans.
No, it's the fans. It was actually an attorney in New Orleans who started sued the NFL on behalf of the season ticket holders of the Saints. So, no, it wasn't
an organization.
Basically, the Saints owner has come out, and she's made the comments that she just wanted to make sure that this doesn't happen again, whether it's to the Saints or another team. And she's basically working with the NFL to make sure something like this doesn't happen again. And for the most part, I think from her perspective, she's trying to protect the integrity of the game. And right now, the integrity of the game is questioned big time.
Uh-oh.
Well, I'll have some comments later in the show with that and the teams that are in the Super Bowl. But Curtis, you got anything?
I heard this today on talk radio here in Portland, Oregon. The what if the Patriots blow out the Rams in the Super Bowl? 2 weeks from now, this call is going to come back up because NFL fans are going to say they shouldn't have even been there. The Saints should have been there off of this call. So this has ramifications that if the NFL better be careful with the ramifications of this. I also, I'm such a football fan, and I've been an athlete, and I've played football. I indict teams that never – I indict four teams because the four teams that have never, ever given their players a chance to be a champion, the Cleveland Browns, the Jaguars, the Houston Texans, and the Detroit Lions. Those were the only four teams, and I've said that in this radio station, that have never given their people an opportunity, not even an opportunity, to become a champ. And that call took away a hard-fought season, a mountain to climb for a team that went through it, and the possibility Dan Marino in his second year went to a Super Bowl and he never went back again. Yep. That's horrible for an athlete. That's horrible for a man to stand there and have that realization. And this play and that call can potentially do that to a grown professional athlete.
All right. I love how we've got the athletes side of that too. And I mean, and from the first action play of football too, but it's crazy because, I know we're going to talk about this later. We're definitely going to dive into how overtime should be called. You know, this I think the biggest thing from this call is that there's going to be a lot of talk about this and how it may change the game, Rob. So that's kind of the good news on that front for you. I know the bad news is obviously, you guys are still kind of in your feelings because of the loss and everything like that. And I will say this, as a Falcon fan, man, I sincerely thought that once it got to overtime, that the Saints were going to actually come back and win. I was like, man. And then that didn't happen. That's what I was, thinking. Everyone was upset about the call. And everyone has got bad calls. I mean, I can recall like five or six calls in my head that changed the ramification of the game. I mean, you can say there's holding on every single play, but it's tough. And I think the thing you got to think about is just the ramification of that call at that time. You know, obviously there's good no calls, and sometimes folks are playing hard. And then there's a couple of things that we're going to talk about definitely as far as that as the show goes on too. You know, and I know you mentioned the Detroit Lions, and they've had some calls. I mean, is it still a catch with Calvin Johnson? They get screwed so many times with Aaron Rodgers, and obviously that's not for the Super Bowl, but, certain calls, Tuck rule, going back to Tom Brady. I mean, there's all these different calls that have changed the whole ramification of the way the game is played. So we hope that from this situation that the NFL will definitely take a look at that and see how it plays out. Now, on the other side, I mean, I'm kind of happy, Robinson, no offense, because any other time I would not want you guys to come. But I do wonder if that would have been a better game, the Saints versus the Patriots, not just in Atlanta. I just figured that'd be, you talk about the worst scenario, and then you talk about the Patriots, how they won, and Patrick Mahomes didn't get a chance to even play in overtime. So that's kind of like, that's just kind of like disappointing from that perspective. So that's something else we got to talk about, how the overtime rules have to be played too, but I mean, hell, I'll talk about some calls that happened to us in the 2012 when Roddy Wright gets face masked by Navarro Bowman, and there's a call from that. And, you know, Jared Goff got hit in the head to your game. There's all these different calls that don't get, you know, and this is one of those things. I mean, how do you, like you say, you don't want to put the game in the hands of the officials, but, I mean, there's certain calls that definitely change the course of the game, change momentum, and we definitely got to do a better job, I think, moving forward. And this game will probably do that too. So that's kind of my two cents on that. And let's talk about this, gentlemen. I guess, should they make those calls reviewable, I guess, is the question. And then we'll get to talk about some worse calls in history too. And it's tough because I know we're trying to do everything in our power to make sure that we're getting the call right. And I know it's going to slow down certain parts of the game. But, I mean, I'm not sure if that's kind of like the right move. I mean, because, again, in that moment, like you said, Rob, you kind of – I give you credit for stepping up and saying, hey, you know, that's not the main reason that the Saints lost. And like I said, you guys had an opportunity in overtime, which, again, I thought it was going to come down to that. I thought you guys were going to make that play, but that interception happened. But, again, it's just – do you think the cost of your review, I guess, is the question, Rob?
Well, I tell you what. And, you know, I might sound like a homer for answering this question the way I'm going to answer it. If you had asked me this before this game this past Sunday, I would have said, no, I don't think it should be reviewable. Well, when you're in question of the outcome, the integrity of an outcome of a game of that magnitude, you have to make the play reviewable because that is the most blatant non-call I think I've ever seen in all the sports. When a guy was hit 4 yards before the ball even got to him, and yeah, if you go back and look at it, then when he hit the guy,
like
the ball was still 4 yards away.
It was 2 yards away.
The ball was still 4 yards away when he got hit, and it was a helmet to helmet. It was pass interference, and it was helmet to helmet. You cannot let a play like that question the integrity of the outcome of your game. Now the Super Bowl is tainted. The Super Bowl is tainted, whether you want to believe it or not.
Dang,
the Super Bowl
came out
is tainted.
Tainted. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
The Super Bowl is now tainted. So
okay.
You cannot have an integrity of your game being questioned. You have to make the play. You have to make the play reviewable for something like that.
But Rob, that still had to
especially in the playoffs. Especially in the playoffs.
Hey, there was no call on the field, right? During that play, there was no call. So,
yep.
What do you do at that point? Then, this is for everybody in here. So, what do you do if there's no call on the field and something like that happens where there's pass interference? Do you have an extra challenge flag to throw out there and say, hey, look at this play, because here's what's going to happen with that. You know, there's holding on every there's holding and there's grabbing and crossing this. So that opens up such a huge can of worms. If there's not a flag on that play to challenge or overrule something, then you have what? You have an extra – you know, green-colored flag that you throw out there for a specific play like this, and what is that? Is that the last minute of the game, or would that be the last 2 minutes? When would you be able to use that?
My
you
thing
know?
Is, I think you got to have something in place to where it has to be either to be able to be challenged, or in the last 2 minutes, referees should be able to look at those kind of calls. And, you know, for something of that magnitude, for a play to decide the outcome of a game of that magnitude is you have to review it if it's under 2 minutes. And I think it needs to be for playoff games. I don't know if you need to do it for regular season games, but when you have an outcome of a game like that in the NFC Championship game, I mean, come on, what the outcome is, you question the integrity of the outcome? You have to make that play reviewable. Or you have to give the coaches an opportunity to change the challenge.
You can. And what he's talking about is actually totally correct. And take it a further step because that's where it's going to go. So what if you're in week 17 and you got two teams vying for the conference title and one team don't make the playoffs at all, and then that happens in the last 2 minutes of that game, and you're like, oh, well, that game would have decided the playoffs, so now we got to extend it to the whole regular season. You're going to keep opening up. You're going to have four and a half hour games. You just can't do that because you're gonna have to open up everything to review in that particular situation. It's just not gonna be pass interference. What I would say is, you're paying these refs to be all-star refs, make the damn call. There's nothing in you that sees that.
There's always human error.
And you just don't make that, and you got to make
that. Yeah,
but
that was so blatant, Andre. You can't question
that. That's so blatant. There's some things I'll give you if you don't feel like he got his toes tapping,
yeah.
You see that blade of grass come up and stuff like that. That I can give you, but it wasn't 4 yards. It was like 2 yards. He's absolutely right. You run it through that dude. Helmet to helmet, you got a back judge, and you got a judge sitting right there looking at the play. I don't know if you've seen the camera shot of it, but he's sitting there looking right at the play. Like, I don't think you need to review that. I think what you have to do is have more confident referees that can't miss such an egregious call. And that's where I feel like you're right to an extent, Rob. You got to just keep the rules in place to do it. But if you open that up, man, you're opening it up to everything. And then something happens at 3 minutes. It's like, well, is 2 minutes good enough? Because 3 minutes is this. It just is going to keep expanding, and it's going to get out of control. What has to happen is the refs that are chosen to do that game, who are supposed to have this pedigree of refereeing, have to make that call. Nothing else.
That's tough.
I
heard Peter King on the radio today say what he would rather see, and this made me think of something. He said the coach's discretion, they should be able to make a challenge on every single play. But
I don't agree with that.
Don't add any more challenges. Don't add any more challenges to what they have already. And most coaches hold one of those challenges for the last 2 minutes of the game anyway. But open it up for coaches to challenge any play. Open it up. Just open it up. Knowing that coaches, if they're smart, they're not going to use up all the challenges on stupid stuff. They're going to need to use their challenges on something that they really feel is the real outcome of something. So think about that. That might not be that bad of an idea, and that might not add any more time to any games either.
I'm going to tell you like this. Your team is going to get called for a real question and holding call when somebody throws a challenge. And you're like, oh, maybe by the literal law that's holding. But that holding call is going to get called all game. And if something real fluky is going to happen, it's going to get called back because of a real questionable a holding call. And then everybody's going to be up in arms about it. I'm just telling you, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
I just wish there was those calls that are marginal. You keep letting them go. But the ones are you call it in the floor of the game where it's like basketball. There are some fouls that aren't called in any games. And when they're consistent with it, everybody's playing the game is okay with it. When you're playing football, if those kind of holding calls happen on both sides, you let it go. But something that blatant just has to be called because it's so blatant. Good God, man, you're a referee in the NFC Championship game. You got to make that call. I shouldn't have to have a challenge for that. There's some certain things where, like the Edelman thing, where you like it almost hitting. That's the thing you got to challenge because I can see that being a bang-bang play where they can miss that. That one I get right then in that particular situation. That makes sense. But come on, man. You got to make that pass interference call. You got to make it. It's just challenge or no challenge. You got to make that call, ref. Point blank.
Well, to me, it looked like that the game was bigger than what the officials could officiate. It was almost like they were seen to be overwhelmed, hesitant, too afraid to make a call. You know, and you can't have that. You got to have the best of the best. You got to have the best of the best in there, willing to man up and make certain calls either way. But one thing I will say, I don't think the Super Bowl's tainted. I think that the Rams, even though there was a bad call, the Rams had a good season. They had a good game plan to come in there and play the Saints, and I think they're going to play a good game in the Super Bowl.
Yeah,
I agree with you.
Yeah, I know. Go ahead, Curtis. Go ahead.
I'm not, like I said in the beginning, don't let the Patriots blow these guys out. And now, like I said, this raises its ugly head. If the Rams play them tight, if we go into overtime in the Super Bowl, we'll probably get past this.
Yeah.
I, you know, it's, I'm trying to think what I would have did in that situation. And I've been thinking about that ever since I saw it. As a coach, I probably would have called a timeout. I probably would have got the head referee to call New York City. I need me an answer. And I need me an answer now. And I got my team all back on the sideline. And if I don't get satisfaction, I'm getting fined and I'm getting arrested because I'm not going further. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
If I was Sean Payton down there, the NFL was going to probably fire me because I would have done something ugly.
He took a whole other well.
Roger Goodell had to come out of the stands and put his foot in. It would have got bad. If I was the coach and I know my personality and I know what kind of person I am, I would have got some kind of answer right then and there.
I'm
really
not coach right now. Goodell hadn't even commented on the situation yet. He hadn't even made a comment. No bleep out of Roger Goodell. Not a single word on the play. Not a single word.
He's going to take all of it because the owners are he's doing what they want him to do. You ain't talking about the owners. You're talking about him. We talk about the refs because they just can't escape it because the refs was so bad. But we're still talking about Roger Goodell. That's why he makes like $35 million a year. He's like, yeah, talk bad about me. I'm laughing all the way to the bank. These dudes love me. See, all was my good money. Hey, he good. He gave me all that money.
Yeah,
arrogance. I ain't got to say.
I think every year in the off season, whatever type of business or whatever kind of company you're running, you have to look at how you can improve on improving your product. And right now, the NFL has to sit down and how they can prevent this from happening again, and they have to figure out a solution. And because obviously, I mean, whether you agree with me or not, there's 50%, probably more than 50% of the United States that believe the Super Bowl is tainted. And so whatever you do, you have to improve your product. Like I said, you don't have to agree with it, but there's more than half of the country that does. And
I think more than half of the country believes
that. Based over 200 or 300 people that I've talked to today, probably more than half of them agree that the Super Bowl is tainted. So whether you agree with it or not, there's a large part of America that does believe that. And so I think as the NFL, you have to figure out how to prevent this from happening again. You have to come up with a solution, whether it's, making it reviewable in the last 2 minutes, whether the coaches can throw a challenge flag. You have to figure out something to make sure that another team don't go through the same thing again. The NFL has to do that. They have to show their fans that they're going to make sure that this doesn't happen again.
Better
there has to be something that fixes the problem. In any type of business, if you fail your customers, you have to figure out how you don't fail your customers again.
I just kind of wrap this up because we'll be here. Go ahead, Jakey. Your last point.
I was going to say, I agree with your percentage that people feel like y'all got screwed. But I don't think that was saying though people feel like the Super Bowl was tainted. I feel like those are two different topics. Did y'all get screwed all day? Y'all got screwed. There's no question y'all got screwed. But
I'm just telling you what I heard of over 200 or 300 people I've talked to today.
They want your phone. They want your swing on them. He said, how do you feel about it, Rob? You still talk it's tainted? It's tainted. They didn't want you to swing on them,
I'm at a conference here in Atlanta right now, and that's what people are telling me.
Oh, so you're going to tell us you don't have to see? Okay, it's time to move on. Come on.
But I'll say this. Go ahead. I will say this, Rob. In spite of, like I said, you my boy and everything like that, and you know how I feel, man. We did not want to see no Saints Super Bowl up in here. So if it was any other year.
I mean, that's not the point.
But what I'm saying is, I'm agreeing with you 100% blatant. That was missed call. We all know it was missed call. But the second piece was that y'all still had opportunity to win. That's the bottom line from that perspective. 98% of that would have happened there, but y'all did have an opportunity to win in overtime. And I really thought I was like, they're going to come back in overtime. And it didn't happen. So,
yeah, like I said, again, I'm not going to totally blame it on officials. But, you know, even
the thing
just
that
in the text message, it's hard to recover from something like that.
It is hard to recover. It is.
Mean,
but like I said, again, we'll talk about this, though, because, like, I'm telling you, there's been let's talk about the Tuck rule that, you know, that the Raiders are playing against Tom Brady, how this whole crap started. I mean, that was still
but was
a
that
controversial
blatant?
Call. We're still trying to – but I'm saying there's a couple calls. Okay, maybe it wasn't blatant, but
no.
I'm saying there's a couple calls that can go back and you can think about, like, oh, my God, everyone's got calls in your head that you know. And like I said, maybe they may not come down to, like, Super Bowl, but I'm saying there's a lot of calls in your head that you, okay, man, this could have changed the whole ramifications of the game. You know, we talk about, you know, was it a catch, you know, with freaking the Lions and Calvin Johnson. And like I said, I've got calls in my head that I know, like, affected the Falcons. Like, man, like I said, the 2012 championship game whenever we were playing San Francisco for the Super Bowl, same thing happened. Now, wasn't, you know, freaking Roddy White gets freaking face mask and then by Navarro Bowman, they don't call that. You know, we were literally in the freaking red zone. And we were like, ah, now granted, different scenario as far as from that, because that was more like, from your perspective, part of the Saints. But there's certain calls that we know in our head, like, if that call was made, it would change the whole dynamic of the whole situation. So we all have calls in our head that are like, man, that's terrible, blah, 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 and whatnot, too. So I don't know if it's the worst in history, anything like that. And I will kind of, like, push up the topic as far as the OT rules. And I definitely think there should be a change because, you know, as we kind of shift gears as far as that, I mean, I think it should be kind of similar to college. I'm not saying, like, 25, like, the 25-yard line, but I definitely think that both teams should have the opportunity to actually get a chance to get a possession and score. And then I guess, like, if you get a field goal, the other team has to get like a touchdown to win or something like that. But I definitely think there should be a way so that balance it out too, so that in the overtime, both teams get an opportunity to actually get a chance to make it more exciting. Because again, once the Patriots got that, and then Tom Brady scores and Patrick Mahomes didn't even get a chance to answer, it was like, that's terrible. What do you say no to, JQ? You say no to
Australian
opener?
I agree on the other.
I disagree.
What?
I disagree with that. They never blitzed them. It was 39 and 2 3rd and 10s that New England had. A 39 and 2 3rd and 10s, and you playing at home and you don't blitz on one of those long third downs and make them get 5 yards to the 9 or 10, and you make
them
kick that field goal, and then Patrick Mahomes gets a chance to get on the field. At some point, the defense gets paid too. They got to make a stop.
You
can't give up a 39 and 2 3rd and 10s sitting back in coverage against Tom freaking Brady. And then say, oh, man, they got to change the rules because we didn't get the ball. Man, y'all get paid to play defense, too. Defensive coordinator gets paid to make better play calls. I disagree. You've got to be
able to
get off the field at some point.
I'm with you on
right?
that, but I'm saying, too, like, it will be good to at least to have, like, I think, like, for the whole, like, for the game, it would be cool to, like, have something where both teams at least get an opportunity to go back and forth. But that could be me. I mean, again, I'm with you that defense, if you get a stop, hey, it's over. You know what I'm saying? I'm with you for that. But I'm not saying, like, 100%
you
like
got to get a stop.
College. But, I'm with you. And the Chiefs actually fired their freaking defensive coordinator. So there you go. So the Chiefs may realize they're off with that, too. But I'm just saying, like I said, I think it would be good to at least have, like, a little, like, I don't know, maybe I'm not eloquently explaining it, but I'm thinking that it would be good to, you know, have some rules and say, okay, if one team gets an opportunity to score, then, okay, give the other team an opportunity as well. You score a field goal, the other team has to score a touchdown to win, something to that effect. But I think it would be neat to have that from that perspective. So that's all I was saying. But go ahead, Rob.
Well, I'm going to say this. Obviously, the NFL just recently changed the overtime rules back in 2010, if I'm not mistaken. So we still very, very fresh as far as changing the overtime rules. So I wouldn't change the overtime rules. And I'll tell you what, the reason why the overtime rules was changed is because of the NFC Championship game between the Saints and the Vikings back in January 2010. The Saints win a coin toss. They go down the field and kick a field goal and win the game. And that was the reason why the overtime rules was changed because the NFL felt like you shouldn't win a game just on a field goal in overtime without the other team touching possession. So they made it to where you can end it on a touchdown but not a field goal. But that was the reason why the overtime rules were changed because of the Saints-Vikings NFC Championship game from the 2009-10 season. Like I said, the Saints won a coin toss, went down the field, kicked the field goal, won the game. Well, the Vikings never touched the ball. So the NFL made it to where you had to score a touchdown to win. And if you don't score a touchdown, then both teams have to get the possession at least once. So they just recently changed the overtime rule. So I don't see the need for changing the overtime rule. And that was the reason why they changed it. Kay was the chairman of the competition committee at that time. And he said that you shouldn't have to win the game on the field goal without the other team touching the football. So I don't think they should change the overtime rule.
Thank you. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Dre. I just burns me up.
All good. But we're on the same page with that too. Like I said, you get paid. Everyone gets paid to make the stops. And then yeah, again, so Tom Brady does it again. I mean, Lord have mercy, freaking frack. Nothing else I can say about that. I'm sure Curtis and Gary have been calling about that because I know how Curtis loves the Patriots.
He's the best in the business. So as much as we hate him, but he just finds a way to get it done.
100%.
Well, you know, indict. Because of what happened, Kansas City absolutely didn't deserve to be in the Super Bowl. The Patriots went into Kansas City and did everything they wanted to do, and Kansas City didn't do anything they needed to do. Number one, stop the run.
In the first half.
They didn't do that.
Yep.
Number two, not Tom Brady off his spot.
Right.
The only time that the Patriots win, the NFL knows this. The only time that you beat the Patriots is when you almost murder Tom Brady. When you knock him off the spot, you knock him on the ground. You put a helmet through his chest.
Yes.
You can beat the Patriots when you do that. When you don't do that and you let that man sit back in his 3 seconds, he slices up your defense. And in that overtime, I'm the coach. Defense? I got my whole team in front of me. Who here is man enough to stop this team? Because if you guys don't,
you gotta be fired up.
We're going home. What kind of man do I got on this defense?
Yeah,
it's
right.
And, they don't deserve. They do not deserve to be in that Super Bowl.
Thank you.
And that's typical Andy Reid.
We agree.
Conservative.
Andy Reid, conservative down the stretch. He's been that way his whole career. He gets in a big game, and it's predictable. That's why they laid back, you know, rushing for, you know, and no pressure on Brady,
right.
And here he goes, you know.
Yep.
The Rams can learn from this. If all they have to do is just watch that game and say, what can we do different? You know, let's send in linebackers. Let's send in safeties. Let's blitz him.
Aaron
let's
Donald.
Knock him on his butt.
Yes. The Chiefs don't have Aaron Donald. And the Rams might be able to get away with doing that. But the Chiefs know they don't have Aaron Donald. So I'm with you 100%. You know you don't have that dude. You only have these sacks because you've gotten up on teams throughout the course of the season to where they can't run the ball. So you can just pin your ears back and just go after the quarterback. You can't do that against Tom Brady in that situation. On that first 3rd and 9, when you don't blitz, when you get to that 3rd and 10, on that first 3rd and 10, you've got to send at least a 5th rusher, and if not a 6th rusher, to hit him off his spot, hit him in the chest, make him throw the ball before he wants to because it's 3rd and 10. What if he throws a 4-yard pass and they only get another yard after the carry? It's 4th and 5. You know they're going to probably kick the field goal in that situation. And if he misses or makes, you still get Patrick Mahomes on the field. I'm 100% with you. Kansas City does not deserve it. You've got to be able to blitz it. But the Rams have Aaron Donald and Sue, so they might be able to get away with some things that the Chiefs can't. But I hope that Wade Phillips sees enough of those 4 aren't getting home, send this 5th guy. You've got to be able to do it. You cannot let Tom Brady sit back there and pick you apart.
Yep.
This was supposed to be a down year for the Patriots, and they still make it to the Super Bowl. We've been talking about all year that this was the most vulnerable Patriots team we've seen in a while, and yet, once again, they finally make it to the Super Bowl. Unbelievable.
Yep. Ridiculous.
Yep. And it's funny because we're watching the game. I'm sitting back there, and, I mean, you're like, Julian Edelman, they were making catches that were oh, my God. Chris Hogan, like, Gronkowski got shut down pretty much, and then Sonny Michel was going nuts. And it was just – I'm like, how are the Patriots beating y'all? It was nuts. But they do it. They just scheme, man. It was like, you know, beautiful timing. And like you said, they couldn't stop. So defense and whatever conservative, it just wasn't good, man. So we got about 19 minutes here. So I guess let's talk
love
about
them. Right here. Belichick and Brady are the best in the business.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
We're going to talk about if Sean McVay is a superstar coach because, you know, obviously, you know, everyone's trying to find the next Sean McVay, so that's going to be yes to that. But then I guess from your brandish point, Rob, I mean, what do you think about this? Do we think that the Patriots are going to win this? Everyone is pretty much assuming that it's going to happen. I mean, it just seems like with a young quarterback like Jared Goff, you know, Belichick's going to have a lot of things up his sleeve to kind of confuse Goff. And you got to hope that the defense is just enough, but I don't know if it's enough to beat Tom Brady from what we see. But, I mean, I'm hoping that. But what are your thoughts about that?
I don't really care about the game, but I'm going to pick the Patriots to win. because it just, they just continue to find a way. I think they're going to continue to find a way. I mean, I picked the Chiefs to beat them this past week, and I'm not going to pick against the Patriots again. They just seem to find a way. You saw it a few years ago when they came back and beat Atlanta. I mean, they lost to the Eagles last year, but they just seem to find a way. To get things done. And even when you think they're down and out, like I said, all year long, we've been talking about on this show that this is a vulnerable Patriots team. It's not the same Patriots team. They don't have a weapon on the perimeter. Their defense is not the same. And guess what? They're right back in the Super Bowl. Yet again, they find a way to get it done. And I think they somehow find a way to get it done and beat the Rams as well. Mm-hmm. And I do think Sean McVay is an outstanding young coach. Just to answer that question, I don't know if I'm not going to put him in superstar status yet because I want to, you know, he's got to win some Super Bowls first for me to put him in that category. But obviously
really
what he's done with the Rams in 2 years has been outstanding, what he's built, you know, two straight division championships.
Turn the team around.
And obviously last year they lost in a wild card round to the Falcons. But this year playing in the Super Bowl, what he's done in 2 years has been outstanding, but I'm not yet ready to put him in superstar status yet.
Yeah, you got to get some hardware. Like, he's a really good coach. But to make superstar status, you're going to have some ring behind your name. So he's not there yet for me. Yeah, I mean, you can't have superstars that don't have a title as a head coach. It's just not the way it works. And it doesn't work that way for me. So I think he's on the cusp, but he's not there yet. And my goodness, I really want to take the Rams. I really do. Because I feel like that front four is a different front four, and they can do a lot more damage on their own. You talk about Sue, you talk about Donald, you talk about Fowler, they picked up from Jaguars, and a really sneaky, quietly good deal. You talk about Littleton and linebacker. Like, they have the pieces, but the thing that concerns me is that I feel like Bill Belichick will find a way to exploit Marcus Peters because he's not as good as he thinks he is. And I feel like with 2 weeks, he'll find a way to make him look like absolute trash. And the other thing is, we don't know what's going on with Todd Gurley. Like, him on the bike and sitting on the sidelines, and C.J. Anderson has had a good run. I get that. But you could see C.J. Anderson was gassed, you know, coming into that third quarter because he just wasn't used to carrying the load like that. Does Todd Gurley get healthy enough in these 2 weeks to be Todd Gurley? Without knowing that and without, you know, us probably, you know, having a show before the Super Bowl, that being said, I got to go with Belichick and Tom Brady. With Gurley being the X-factor for me, a healthy Gurley changes the game for the Rams. But without knowing that, I got to go with the Patriots.
I'll tell you what, Aaron Donald is unblockable. That dude is incredible.
He's ridiculous. Yep, but 2 weeks you give them boys to prepare for you, they really come up with some stuff. I got to give them credit for that.
Wow. Well, I'll say that the Rams do have a defense that's going to slow down the the Patriots. And I do think they have the team with a if Gurley's healthy to keep that ball away from him. And they do have the pass rushers that can put, you know, that can put Brady on his back. If they put Brady on his back and they get a couple of 15-yard penalties, but they put the fear of God of him, in him, I'm okay with that too. I'm picking the Rams. I think that too much credit is given to Bill Belichick. I think that Brady is, you know, is just an absolutely phenomenal quarterback. That I think that you take Brady out of the picture, you look at Belichick and his other coaching stints with just a regular team. Yeah, Belichick. Yeah.
I love it.
Isn't that how you pronounce it?
I love it.
Because the Rams also are going to be – because the Rams are not only going to be playing the Patriots, they're going to also be playing the officials.
The pro-Patriots.
Yes.
Gary, before the show, Gary was telling me, that the pro-Patriot officials – in Vegas, the Patriots are favorite. I thought the part of the game against Kansas City that I saw, and I still stand that Kansas City didn't deserve to be in that game. But there were some calls in that game, and I texted Gary. The referee, Chet, on the bottom of their check, must have Bob Kraft on that. I think the referees might be getting paid by Bob Kraft, because they were getting some outrageous calls. The Patriots were in that game, and even in the replay, I'm looking at stuff, and I'm trying to figure out what the ref. I didn't see the same thing the ref saw, but you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with my eyes. But what I'm hearing out here in West and the other talk radio shows that I listen to, the Rams.
It sounds like what y'all are saying that a lot of NFL referees need to go see an eye doctor.
I'm gonna try to meet one. I'm gonna try to find out is Bob Kraft on the bottom of the checks for the referee. I might Google that or something. Because I think there might be something to that. What I'm hearing out here, though, I'm hearing that, and the Patriots are an outlier because they don't do it like this. But the Rams and last year's Philadelphia Eagles, they went after and paid players. They went after players. And they paid players to be on this team, and let's go get a Super Bowl. And not just the Sean, the coach team. McVay, not even his team, but this is pro player, and this is the positive thing that a lot of the radio people I was listening to today is because it's kind of like what basketball's doing when all these guys collude together and make their money and be on teams and win championships. And maybe we're seeing a little bit of that, which would be pro player in the NFL with owners and systems paying people to be here and get it done.
All right, that's cool. All right, gentlemen, we got about 10 minutes here. Let's talk really quickly as our last topic for the NFL here. Let's just talk briefly about where Nick Foles is going to be, man. So, where do you think he's going to end up, Rob?
Nick Foles? I tell you, I think
Nick Foles.
And try to figure out a way to acquire him. Is watching the Redskins, especially with the situation with Alex Smith at quarterback. You know, obviously we all praying and hoping for the best for Alex Smith. Hopefully he recovers from that injury. But, I mean, that's a big question mark for the Washington Redskins. I know it's a team that's in your division. And, you know, typically teams don't like to trade with teams in their division. We've seen it happen a time or two, but it doesn't happen often. But I think the Redskins are a team that probably should try to figure out a way on how they could acquire Nick Foles from the Philadelphia Eagles. I think that's a team that comes to mind for me that I think could benefit from his services as well. I mean, think of maybe the Miami Dolphins as well. But I think the Redskins is a team that really should give Nick Foles a real strong look here in this offseason.
Won't he be a free agent? It's a mutual option, I think, for this next year. So I think he might be a free agent if he declines this side of the option. You can take me on that. Well, I'm going to go to two other things. I'm looking at Jacksonville, and I'm saying, you know, our defense is supposed to be better. Maybe we just have some internal stuff because we knew our offense was bad. But if I'm Jacksonville, I'll kick the tires, and I go to another team in that division, the New York Giants. You can say what you want to say about it, but if you look at that offense outside of Eli about what they should have with Saquon and Ingram and OBJ and Russell Shepard, I mean, you feel like they should have the makings of a good offense if they have a good trigger man. So I would look at them as well. So I need to look into that contract. But I thought it was a mutual option. I think they have to pay him like $20 million if they both agree. So they both were kind of like, yeah, this ain't going to happen. You got Carson Wentz, then I'm going to move on. So, you know, those are two options, though. I agree with you on those, but I think there's two other ones. Nick Foles is getting ready to get paid.
Nice.
Well, what I was hearing, reading some stuff online, is I'll tell you what, the Eagles, they don't like Carson Wentz's attitude at all. Prima donna attitude. They don't like him as a teammate. And a lot of them want Nick Foles to stay in Philadelphia. And for them to get rid of a player that thinks that he can do no wrong, and this is just what I've read, but it was several different articles that I read online, you know, over the last couple of days about Philadelphia and the teammates and what their thoughts were on the quarterback situation. And I thought that was interesting that here, you know, they drafted this guy, but really it's been Nick Foles that's, you know, he's the one that's got the ring. He's the Super Bowl MVP. Has Carson Wentz even won a playoff game?
Has Carson Wentz lived through a season healthy, even in college?
No, but to your point, those same articles, some of the Eagle players came out in defense of Carson Wentz and they said they thought the article was trash. So you got some other stats to that as well.
Okay, that's a divided locker room. Is that good too?
No, it's not. No, it's not.
I like it. I like it. I'm glad.
As Andre likes to say, where there's smoke, there's fire. So it could be partially some truth to that, from wherever that story came from. But I mean, it's no question that Carson Wentz is the guy they drafted high. With the talent and ability, they want him to be the franchise quarterback. There's no doubt about it. I think I said this on the show last week. I think there's actually part of the organization that actually probably happy that he was lost last week because you know they want to turn this franchise over to Carson Wentz. And but you know sometimes there's smoke where there's fire. How you say it, Andre?
where there's smoke, there's fire. Yeah.
It partially could be some truth to that story. I mean, we don't know, but it partially could be some truth to that story. That team just seemed like they responded better with Foles at quarterback.
Agreed. Yes.
Who?
I agree with that.
I think for the organization, I think the value in Carson Wentz is he's still on a rookie contract.
Yep.
And this is when you make your move for better for paying some players around him and over. I think his value, not more than, you know, like I said, with his, for me, with his injury history, I'm not into that. But if he's still on a rookie contract, which I believe he is, this is when you made your move. And not to mention, what kind of players can you get for Nick Foles? This is when you make your move to a stack of team ready to take that division.
Well, this is,
which
like
to my dismay means that they would be the division winner over the Dallas Cowboys.
Well, again, this is definitely – you guys have all talked about it. This is definitely kind of make or break. This is the year because, like I said, at this juncture, you can't keep – you know, you're at the situation where next year you got to pay Carson. You know, I think it's going into this year, actually, so I'll verify that too. But you can't keep both, like as Rob said. There's no way. So they are kind of happy that Nick lost. But, hey, you know, thank you, but, you know, I think we got to, like, move on with Carson. But then this is the year. I mean, you know, now you got to figure out if this is, you know, we're saying all the right things, but if you have another, you know, kind of injury-plagued season or something like that, if you don't, you know, produce, and this is going to definitely have some ramifications as far as future, as far as your draft and little things like that too, man. So
last year's rookie deal, then the year after that, his player option where they had to jump to the big money. Mid-term money from the quarterback kicks in, and then he becomes a free agent. So you still really got it for 2 years if you exercise the option.
2 years. Okay,
this
cool. Okay, I didn't know. Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Thank you. So I figured it was close. I was looking up, trying to look it up real quick as we were talking, but I figured it was, like, right down the pipe, too. So they got, like I said, 2 years to kind of figure it out if this is the dude or not. All right. Rob, this is the fantasy shout-outs. We're almost close here. We got, like, 3 minutes left.
All right, for those of you all that are competing in our fantasy basketball league, a quick fantasy shout-out. The team of the week last week was the champ is here. James from New Orleans, he had a 6-2 win over the Duke. And Saints Pelicans 23, that's Ronald from New Orleans. His team still remains in first place with 88-23-1. So those are our fantasy shout-outs for the week. Obviously, James and Gary and Curtis, we got to get you guys in some of our fantasy. And so you guys can compete with us here going into next season. But that kind of wraps up the live portion of our show, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to be back on the air live on Super Bowl night right after the game. That's going to be Sunday night, February 3rd. Once again, our next live show is going to be Super Bowl night after the game. We'll recap the game Sunday night, February 3rd. That's going to be 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 Central. And for our friends on the West Coast, that's going to be 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. However, we still have more sports to talk. We're going to be in our OT portion here in just a minute. We can't give you this portion of our show live, so click on the same link on tomorrow. We have some more football and some more basketball to get into. So click on the same link on tomorrow, and you can catch the rest of our show. Good night, people.
Steve, we're going to do the fantasy shout-out. Week when after I went 7-1 the week before and was the biggest winner, and the week before that I went 8-0. I went 15-1 over those 2 weeks and they get near fancy shout out because we didn't do it. You see how they get me in America? They just don't want to see me do well. It's okay.
Believe it or not, it's been a couple weeks. Well, I didn't get the shout out either, Jake.
I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about me right now. Okay, thank you, Pastor. But I appreciate y'all for listening
I see
to the show.
Climbing, though.
Yes, sir. As always, I appreciate the feedback. And we'll talk about the Super Bowl here in a couple of weeks. And then Serena Blewett, she gave up 6 straight games and lost that. We'll holler at y'all in a couple of weeks. And you come down here and enjoy the flavor in Atlanta for the Super Bowl and have a good time. But don't get arrested. Please don't get arrested, y'all. Don't do it. Love you. Talk to you next time.
Don't hang with JQ then.
Hey, I ain't never been arrested. But, you know, people come to Atlanta, they lose their mind, they get arrested. I'm just trying to put the warning out. Don't come down here and lose your mind and get arrested. Have a good time. But don't get... Andre, am I lying? Do people not come to Atlanta?
You're telling the truth. You're telling the truth. Hold on. Let me grab this quick caller. Hey, welcome to Talking Sports with the 12th Man. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. What's up, man?
What's going on? Oh, is this, it's been a minute. You calling in to show us love here? What's going on, man?
Oh, not much, man. I'm seeing what you guys were talking about. So
we were just kind of, again, we were kind of kicking up the last stuff regarding, obviously, the Saints, the loss, the missed interference call, and then kind of just talk a little bit more about what's happening as far as Nick Foles, where he's going to go to. So I know
I don't know if you want to, like, really, we can't talk too long because we got to jump some of the topics, but if you want to quickly share your thoughts before we get ready to move on from there.
No, I mean, I'll wait till, you know, whatever else y'all want to get into.
Gotcha. So, really
all
quickly,
right, we'll move
we got,
right
like,
along.
We got, yeah, it's tough because we got like five voices now to get through the show here, but we're going to try to keep this as brief as possible as always, man. So, again, we're kind of in the college football section here, or excuse me, college basketball section. And we're going to talk, we're going to kind of let Rob take the lead as far as Villanova at Butler. We're going to talk about Zion Williamson, how he's been. And kind of like what's been happening with JQ, you know, he went 15-1 over the past couple of 2 weeks for fantasy football. We have yet to talk about James Harden's historic run. James Harden's people reach out to me. They're like, Dre, have a, why haven't we talked about this? So I guess we got to somehow talk about that. And we'll talk about what's happening with what's going on with Carmelo and LeBron and the Lakers, all that fun stuff, too. So, Rob, start us off with the
Villanova.
We'll talk about Zion. I know. Go ahead.
obviously, this Villanova team is probably not as strong as their last 2 years of winning national championships. But they're starting to catch a little fire. They're undefeated in the Big East. And actually, they've done something tonight where that neither one of the championship teams of the last 2 years been able to do, and that's to go on the road and beat Butler and Hinkle Fieldhouse. And they were able to do that tonight with the 80-72 win. This is their first win in Indianapolis in 1,109 days. So this was a pretty big win for Villanova. Like I said, something that they were not able to do in the last couple of years. And so that's a big win. Eric Pascal led the team with 23 points tonight and was big in Villanova winning that game on the road tonight. And as far as Zion Williamson is concerned, we're talking about a guy right now who's the front runner to be the number one pick in the NBA draft. And I just can't think of another college basketball player here that has brought this much excitement in college basketball. And I don't like Duke. You know, I think anybody that's been listening to our show over the last 5 or 6 years, however many years we've been doing the show now, I don't like Duke. I mean, there's no secret to that.
We know.
And, but the level of excitement that he's brought back to college basketball has been incredible. And so I just can't think of a player. Maybe have to go back to Grandma Ma and Larry Johnson in the, you know, early 90s. I don't know. But I don't know if it's been a while since we had this kind of excitement from a player in college basketball in quite some time.
Yeah, I let Rob have a little note that Butler, because I don't want to be mean about it, but I just don't quite need the one I'm going to have a real chance when it comes down to it when we start talking about, you know, the tournament and recent state and the Elite Eight and Final Four. But that dude, Zion Williamson, like, you know, to see him transition from just dunking on acting a fool in high school on people on his mixtape to putting together more of an all-around game where you can't let him shoot. And he comes out and he has a decent night shooting the ball. And, you know, he's not shooting threes. He's not Steph Curry, don't get me wrong. But he finds his own way, you know, in transition with, you know, little scoops and floaters and mid-range game and putbacks and dunks. And he just, I agree with you, just exciting. And you've had other college players that have been good. But, you know, if he can get in the passing lane and get a steal and start breaking away to the hoop, you can almost feel the whole gym just all inhale at the same time, like waiting on him to do something crazy and finish at the rim. And it sucks for R.J. Barrett because in any other year, a lot of times he would be the number one overall pick, but Zion Williamson is just taking the air out of the stadium for him right now. He's ridiculous. In the game tonight versus Pittsburgh, you know, it's Pittsburgh, and I'm happy for that, that they beat him down. But he's ridiculous, dude. And his weight at 18 years old, his stature is crazy. You just don't see that maybe outside of like LeBron, but LeBron didn't play college. So Zion is just a man. I don't like Duke. So anybody listening, this is not me being a Duke fanboy. Nothing like that at all. But that guy right there is just playing out of his mind. I agree with you. I think the one and done is going to go away here pretty soon. But what he's doing right now is just out of control.
Nice. Go ahead, West Coast.
Yeah, out here at the West Coast, getting that news last week that we didn't get a single team in the top 25 is deflating. But in here in Portland, we got a chance to see Gonzaga meet up on the Portland U, which is a Catholic University, and yeah, they. I mean, it was a packed house, and you know, it, our little PU here is in Gonzaga's division, and so the Big Bad Gonzaga, when they came here, they had seven players going to double figures. I really like their chances in the tournament. And being out here on the West Coast and the Oregon Sports Report, Gonzaga's looking like, when I survey the land out here, looking like my only hope for doing anything in that tournament.
Your only one. Your only one. That diamond beacon on the hill. That only one. Your only one. I mean, I'm not trying to rub it in, but you're right. It's your only one.
Nice. Go ahead, caller. Wrap it up.
Zion's one of the best prospects we've seen in decades. Not saying better than some of the top tier, but every number one pick is not the same. You know what I mean? So when you watch Zion, you can see, okay, people are going to pay money to watch this dude play basketball. He could have 10 points, but in that, he could have two plays to really – you know, just change the whole night as far as the highlights, what we do on social media, what we talk about. So, I mean, he's that type of athlete that can create his own brand. I think the question becomes, was it a good idea to go to Duke? Because, okay, you're playing with good players, you got a chance to win a chip. But I think athletes need to start taking on the selfishness of reality and going to some school and playing in the NBA-type system if you're going to have to do the one and done. To prepare yourself for the next year. Because what he's doing right now, none of that is really applicable to the NBA. Like, the college game is totally different. And I wouldn't pay to see R.J. Barrett in a high school game. Like, that's just what it is.
Yeah. Yep.
Nice. Good call. Hey, all right, let's keep this going here. We're going to talk about, man, Robbie got a lot of college basketball. Kansas went over Iowa State, and Creighton's went over Georgetown.
Well, obviously Kansas needed to rebound from what happened to them against West Virginia on Saturday. A big disappointing loss. And obviously freshman point guard Devon Dotson, he had seven turnovers over the weekend against West Virginia. He responded with a big game against Iowa State and obviously turned that around, had eight big assists in that ball game. And then, of course, Dedrick Lawson, 29 points, 15 rebounds. And, of course, Marcus Garrett as well chipped in with 16 points, 5 rebounds, 3 steals. It's a big win by Kansas. And, of course, Creighton's Tyshawn Alexander, 6 three-pointers in the win over Georgetown. Creighton's trying to turn the corner in that Big East to get back in the tournament contention. So that was a big win for them over the Hoyas as well.
Yeah, and I hate that. I want Patrick Ewing to succeed. That Kansas-Kentucky game I'm really looking forward to here on Saturday. But you knew I was excited about seeing Preston Dean with Bob Huggins. I'm a Huggins baby. I know he ain't at UC no more, but I love to see him do well at West Virginia as long as I ain't get UC. That was a big win for West Virginia in that game. I like these blue blood matchups. You know, we get a chance to talk about it later when Kansas plays Kentucky here on Saturday. That's going to have, you know, you got to have that kind of state in the win. It's the difference between a 1-2 and a 3-seed, really, in a tournament when it comes down to it. So that's the game I'm looking at. It's Iowa State. They might do something here and there against Kansas, but, you know, Bill Self has their Kansas program rolling. So they're going to be in it, of course. Can he capitalize in the tournament is a whole other argument because, you know, he's like the new age Luke Olsen. But he's still got to respect that Kansas program. He's doing a good job with it. So, like I said, I'm really intrigued to see Kansas and Kentucky play on Saturday.
Nice. All right. That was more than I expected, JQ. Way to go in. Hey, let's keep this moving here. I want to really hit these next two topics pretty quickly and talk about, will any team, NBA team, sign Carmelo this season? And then who's better between Portland and OKC? And we'll let West Coast handle that too. But really quickly, JQ. I'm sorry. You kind of like had your last remote there. I'll start with Rob here and then we'll do it. Yeah, go ahead. Rob.
I'm sorry. I lost track.
Carmelo.
Well, you guys know how I feel about Carmelo Anthony. Nobody's gonna sign Carmelo Anthony. Come on, man. You don't play any defense, and he's not a team oriented player. And I just don't see him being the asset to a team that's in contention. And why would a team that's in contention waste the money and time with Carmelo Anthony? So I say no. I don't see any team signing him this season. I think it's a waste of money for a franchise.
Wow. This is it.
Yeah.
This is the end.
And, but you know, it's not yet. All the reason because, and I heard my caller laugh when I said, I hope not the damn Lakers. Hell no. But it's LeBron James. It's one place you could go. It's only because LeBron, for all his misguidedness at this point with Carmelo, is still talking about bringing him in the fold. And if you bring him into the fold, if I'm as a Lakers fan, if I'm other Lakers fans, I'm going to say, whoa. Why not just sign DeMarcus Cousins, let him get healthy, and not let him go to Golden State, and not sign Michael Beasley, and just let him be your old dude on the team that comes in and helps you out. You know, healthy. He's way more productive than Carmelo Anthony. Why would you do that? Because Michael Beasley hasn't done anything for you. I'd rather have DeMarcus Cousins sit the bench, but I'd much rather have him over Carmelo Anthony. But Carmelo Anthony and LeBron James' bromance is the only reason why that dude still has a chance right now. And I'm burning incense. I'm saying prayers that they don't do that foolishly. But we'll see.
Burning incense.
Burning incense.
You got to talk. You got to talk better.
Carmelo Anthony being with LeBron, this game passed Carmelo Anthony by a long time ago, and you know he's not self aware enough to realize it. I hope nobody signs Carmelo Anthony, and I don't enjoy personally watching him, but. We're talking about Carmelo Anthony, and all I'm thinking about is Boogie Cousins. And, we're talking Carmelo Anthony, and all I'm thinking about is Boogie Cousins. And, it's almost like if he does anything that he's capable of doing, it's almost the argument, are the Golden State Warriors the greatest team of all time?
Yep. Okay.
Whoa.
I'll say something.
Better between Portland and OKC, but keep it going. Yeah, that's all good. Keep it going.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm going to talk about.
Okay, cool. And we'll let Carl jump in here, too. Go ahead.
Okay. As far as OKC, well, OKC proved it tonight. Our big three played well. 22-15, but Nurk was the one that really cost us tonight. We were down by 4 points. He had 3 turnovers and some sort of a little throw-up shot that was just another turnover. So in that crunch time, really Nurk is the one that I think down the stretch cost us the game, even though his overall body of work has been excellent this year. Dame and CJ both had over 30 points. But I still think right now OKC is a better team. If Portland, they're a team that creates turnovers. In order to beat OKC, you've got to eliminate the turnovers. You've got to make sure those passes, because they cut those passes off and they're off to the races. You know, they're going to dunk it in your face, and that's exactly what they did tonight. And so with that said, right now I think OKC's better. But I wouldn't mind trying our luck in a 7-game series with them. That's for sure. They're one of the teams that I wouldn't. I do want to say about the Northwest Division, though. Northwest Division is just flat out tough to begin with. You got, Denver number 2, OKC number 3, Portland number 4, and the Jazz number 8. So of the 8 playoff spots, 4 of them are from the Northwest Division. That's tough. It's tough to play those guys. It's tough to have a winning record against those teams like that.
Yeah.
All right. Let's put my
you
got to
give Paul George a lot of credit because he could have easily given up on OKC after 1 year because
when you really look at it, they kind of underachieved last year in their first year together. But he made the decision to come back to OKC. And obviously they're still not as good as Golden State, but you can see that they have improved tremendously from last year overall as a basketball team. And that's just another year of Paul George and Russell Westbrook playing together. Dennis Schroeder moved from the Hawks. He's been a nice addition. And they got some solid digs on that team, too, with Steven Adams, you know, taking up space. I mean, that was, you know, a shrewd move by Paul George to give that another opportunity and see what they can do to grow together. And they have gotten – are they drastically better? No, but they have gotten better.
All right, caller, wrap this up. So, no, I don't want to keep you too much longer. I know it's getting kind of late here, so do your thoughts on that.
Well, it's not even close. OKC is way better than Portland. Portland is dependent on Dame being, you know, from another planet to win a series against a better team. Portland's one piece away. They need to do something at the trade deadline, even if it means moving CJ. But as far as OKC, no. When you got Russ and you got Paul, that's a problem. Well, if you shrieking now, wait till you hear what else I'm going to say. The media has done a very good job at convincing people that Carmelo Anthony can't play basketball. No, he's not an all-star anymore. No, he's not playing at the level of what he did, you know, much, much earlier in his career. But, yeah, he can still be a rotational player. And, yes, the Lakers should sign him. There's no reason not to have a vet as a hired gun at the end of the bench that you can use strategically at certain times. But, yeah, the New York –
the only problem is Carmelo don't want to be that kind of player. He's not willing to accept that.
Yeah, that's something that you have decided. That's something that you have decided. There's no way to prove that. There's nothing to use as evidence for that. We have just decided who's a heel and who's a face. No, there's no everybody knows. That's just – some people have decided that, and they add those characteristics onto him and then say he's terrible. And it's like, nah, man, he's still a rotational player.
OKC has asked him to take on that role. He said no. Houston has done the same thing. He said no. The Knicks, no. He still thinks he's a superstar. Still thinks he's starting.
Okay, now, keep laying out
if Carmelo was willing to accept that role, I will shut those arguments down, but the man said move the conversation quickly, though.
Like, he said move the conversation quickly. So if you want me to kill those bad arguments, I will.
I want you to kill that.
Yeah, I want to hear it.
Well, it wasn't about what he wanted to do. It was about what he can actually be effective at. If you bring in Carmelo as a stretch four and ask him to defend power forward and shoot three-pointers, guess what? That's not going to work out. Not really his skill set. So if you bring him in, or in Houston where they said, okay, we're going to bring him in, he's going to be a defender and an open shot guy. Okay, he wasn't going to be a lockdown defender.
He's never been a defender.
I mean, I just want to answer. He's not going to be a lockdown defender, and he's not going to be a guy who just shoots wide open shots. He's a volume shooter. So he wasn't a good fit in Houston. I thought it was a good idea for Houston to get rid of him just because you can get what he gives you in a cheaper fashion, which they got in Gary Clark and those guys. But, like I said, teams who do need scoring punch off the bench, no problem bringing him in as a rotational guy, man. A lot of the selfish stuff that we hear about, think about who some of these quotes came from. Isola and some of these people in New York. And New York people, he failed in New York. You mean when Phil Jackson ruined the cap, ruined the roster, and re-signed him to a max deal and then couldn't build around him because Phil didn't know what the hell he was doing? I mean, yeah, he wasted away his prime.
Wow. But, okay, so I partially agree,
respectfully disagree. And the part that I disagree on is, look,
ain't nothing wrong with being wrong.
Oh, wow. Well, the way I look at it, I mean, I respectfully partially disagree because he's going to four organizations, and they've all tried to get him to be role players, and he cannot fit the role. So he has not proven in any situation to prove that he can be the player that you say he can be in any out of those four situations. So until I can see it, I'm not going to believe it. Two situations where he was asked to be a role player.
Two situations. And he did not fit the role that they wanted for him. Which is fine. Like,
I don't
see where we think
he can't play the three either, though. He can't play the three. If you put him at the three.
Depends on what team you're talking
about. He can't guard threes.
He can't guard a three.
Come on, man. Have you watched Luka guard anybody?
Because let me tell you something, man.
There's a lot of people who can't guard fast threes, depending on what threes you're talking about.
But I'll ask the caller this. because I need your proof is in the pudding, and I'll ask the caller this. Is there any scenario you can think of that Carmelo Anthony can come up to Portland and make Portland a better team? I don't see it. I don't see Carmelo Anthony coming to Portland and they'd be a better team because they have Carmelo Anthony. I don't.
Well, he would need the ball too much, and if you give him the ball and take it away from Dame, you're actually hurting your team. So, no, it wouldn't make sense for Portland. I wouldn't say that's a destination. So, yeah.
I guess you can see him.
Oh, God. Because
he ain't going to get the ball from LeBron. He dare to get the ball from LeBron to have. So,
I don't think he'll be on the court with LeBron. I think he's going to be on the court with the second thing. So some of the touches that Lance gets, you give to him, not that much of a difference as far as what he can do defensively and offensively. So it's not. Look. Like I said, man, we got a weird way of looking at Carmelo, man, just because how bad those New York years were and how people covered him. And now we kind of carry that over. And I don't think people see that we do that. I remember when Garnett went to Boston, and the story on Garnett was can't win the big one, can't lift the team. Garnett's washed up. They get to Boston, and, you know, what happens. Now, I'm not comparing those two things. I'm just talking about how narratives get set, and then we roll them. Yep.
I'm just going to be honest with you, and I'll let it go. I'm not blaming the way I feel about it on what happened in New York. I'm honestly not blaming that on that at all. I'm watching, like Rob said, the stops on the way where we talked about him, and it's obvious that he would just accept being the sixth man and doing that, being that Vinny microwave off the bench, and saying that, okay, maybe, but he don't feel like that's who he is. He wants to start. Like, he feels like he's supposed to start and be a part of, you know, if that's the first option, the second option. I haven't seen anything out of him that says, I'm willing to
be the majority of the games in Houston, he came off the bench, my man. He didn't start the majority of the games in Houston. So he's already conceded that.
And I've also seen him
walk
from
the bench off the bench in that role.
Yeah, I've seen him have horrible games off the bench. I have.
Look,
I'd rather that
when he does come back and y'all see him play, and this is the good thing about it, y'all's baseline on him is so low that him coming in and doing anything, y'all going to be like, you know what, he's a little better than I thought he was, and then I get to be right just because y'all see
yeah,
him
you,
so lowly on me.
You call
still,
back in, if that happens, you call back in, you're right. Yeah, you, I see yeah, like you call back in, you're right, and that happens, you call back in, I would gladly say, you know what, you – was 100%
exactly.
Right. That was 100% wrong.
And I
so if he comes off the bench,
if he
gives them 7-6 a game, do y'all think that's out of this world, out of this realm of possibility?
As Charles Barkley would say, I may be wrong, but I doubt it.
For him to go in there and get the rotation, I was waiting
about
for that. 7.6 boards. I think he can do that.
Man, I think
Phoenix should take us. I think Phoenix should take a shot at him.
Phoenix. No, they got to get their young guys minutes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, 7-6 is so low, though.
Like,
I'm not
a
team with a
record
like that. We spent money on Carmelo Anthony.
Not for 7-6.
You're going to get a guy
say, like, 12,
a veteran 8. Minimum who could come in every once in a while and score. Nothing wrong with it. Honestly, this is kind of the NBA legacy, man. All stars who are no longer what they were, becoming rotational guys and ending the bench. Like, this is where we all. This is where it always goes, right?
Well,
yeah,
I will say this: there's no
right
question
the
that there's no question that Carmelo can still shoot the basketball and can still score points. But it's got to be a little bit more than that. You know, how do you fit on the team? How does your personality fit? How does he fit with the chemistry of a basketball team? Is he going to come with the right attitude? So it's a lot more than being able to put the ball in the bucket. You know, those other elements fit within the realm of that team, and it's going to make them better to compete for a title or advance in the playoffs. And those other elements is what's holding Carmelo Anthony back. It's not the fact that he can't shoot a basketball, but those other elements that comes with Carmelo is what's holding him back.
The tangibles.
Yep. What players have you ever heard of not liking Carmelo? Carmelo's kind of popular with other players, man.
He wears hats.
But
he talks.
But
like
he's not talking about not
liking.
He's talking about does he fit the team, though, because that's the problem. Because right now, yeah, you thought he was going to go to Houston, and that's almost like a tailor-made situation. All he has to do is come in there, you know, score whenever Chris Paul and James Harden aren't there. He couldn't do it for whatever reason.
Yeah,
and then
Chris Paul
right there, okay,
romance off the court, and they still couldn't cut it.
It's crazy.
They're kind of a bad defensive team, and to bring on Carmelo and expect him to be
that's
one of the stronger links in the chain,
I know, but we're saying, though, he was supposed to – he could have been the leader for the second unit, though, from lacking kind of – I'm not trying to put words in Rob's mouth, but he literally –
See, but
said,
this
hey,
is the thing. Why are we knocking him for that? We should celebrate the genius of Daryl Morey for trying it. Daryl Morey trying
we're
to,
not knocking
him, trying
it.
To fit the square peg in this round hole. If it works, cool.
Well,
if it doesn't, we paid him the veteran minimum. You lose nothing.
Yeah, it's just
Well, let me ask you this, though. If he gives you what you think you're going to get out of him, but his net rating is minus 402 when he's on the court in terms of plus-minus, in terms of he scored these points, but he was such a seed on defense and not doing what he needs to do, he might have scored these points. The other team scored right with us. What did we gain out of having him on the court where he came on the court and we didn't gain anything? We went minus 402, and he came up, we was up 3, and he went off the court, and we was down 4.
Hello?
What did you gain?
Well,
if that happens,
he won't be on the court. That's for damn sure.
I think that's what you're going to get.
Well, you know, I have a question. How does he make the court of the Trailblazers better? Somebody tell me, what team in the NBA does Carmelo Anthony make better?
The Lakers.
Why not?
What's wrong with
him going to the Lakers?
Wow.
Uh-oh.
It's great.
There's not
a We got to agree to disagree.
We will be here all night. I love it. All right. Hey, guys. This is the last topic, and we're going to wrap this up. I'm going to leave it with you, JQ, West Coast. Caller, please tell me your name, caller. Please forgive me. I know you called last time. Tell me your name one more time, sir.
Yeah, Naj and AJ.
Naj, that's right. Okay, Naj, okay. So, and then we're going to wrap up the show. So
and we appreciate
ask,
your discussion, Naj. We appreciate you calling.
Yeah,
me.
Naj is rep.
Oh,
hey,
man. We
are good. Can LeBron and Rondo fix the Lakers? So I'm going to let JQ, our resident LA Laker fan, then I'm going to let West Coast, Rob, wrap up the show. Naj, and then Rob. Wrap up the show, and then we're gonna do it, man. So go ahead, let's go in that order.
it depends on your definition of fix. Can they go get to the number one seed and beat the Warriors to get to the championship? Just on those two? No, they aren't there yet. Totally 1-12 on that roster. No, can they come in and stabilize and take them from the 9 seed to maybe like the 4 or 5 seed, and maybe you know get through the first round at 4 or 5 matchup, and then fall to the Warriors? I can see that happening for sure. I think a lot of us can see that happening. So I feel like Rondo is a better version of Lonzo Ball. I really do, especially at this point. It's just can Rondo stay healthy all that time? And now we got to say the same thing about LeBron, given how this wasn't supposed to be a big injury, but now he's missed, what, like 15 games or something crazy like that, a couple weeks. So you get to that point. I think you can come in there, those two can come in there and stabilize them. But let's look at this Lakers team. They are who they were before LeBron got there. So everybody being all up in arms and, well, what's wrong with the Lakers? It's the same young team they had before they got LeBron. They're playing the same kind of way. They're a little bit more progression because the young guys can play a little bit. But why were you expecting them to be able to be so great without LeBron and then not having a floor general that can come either start or stabilize when Lonzo isn't feeling or is hurt? So for me, yeah, if you're talking about can they get into the playoffs with those two, absolutely. Can they win the whole thing? Hell no, that's not where they are yet. And we like you said, the media narrative, not, we get carried away. LeBron is a phenomenal player, but they're not deep enough yet and experienced enough and seasoned enough for all the players behind him to say, you know what, he's going to come in and they go into the NBA Finals. That's just not where they are right now in year one. So, yeah, they can make the playoffs with those two, but they can't win it. Like, come on. No, they can't win it. And I would love for them to win it, but unless somebody makes a mind-blowing leap on these last 35 games, I can't see that happening.
Okay, well, I talked about this, several shows ago. And what I said is there's no off games in the West. Now LeBron is having some, injury problems. if Rondo and LeBron can stay healthy, I see them getting to the 4, 5, 6 seed. If he battles injuries and he doesn't have, and Rondo's a, he's a champion as well. And he's a smart player, and he seems to play big in the big games. So with that said, if those two are healthy, they can make that team relevant. They're not going to win the West.
Mm-hmm.
The best case scenario is win a series.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it's against OKC and not the Blazers.
I second that. You know, LeBron is the whole deal. He's the real deal. And he's the real deal down there in L.A. I said this last time. I think LeBron, I don't think he's that hurt. I think he's kind of sitting back and watching what we got. And he might have that injury. You know, be heartbroken because, oh, wow. I saw that game against Harden and Houston, and they were up on Houston like 30 points. And the game was in Houston, and in the second half, they crumpled like a cheap suit. And Kuzma didn't look good. Brandon Ingram didn't look good. None of them looked good. None of them looked ready to challenge anybody in the West. But because of what he's looking at and we're looking at with LeBron, and that's why in the NBA he's considered Superman. Because with them, with LeBron and Rondo, they're going to be 4 or 5. They may be the Blazers' first round nightmare. And that's going to be heartbreaking for us people in Portland, Oregon.
Nice, Naj. Yeah, I mean, you guys said it all. I mean, as long as they avoid the Warriors in the first round and make the playoffs, the season was a success. They didn't bring in multiple max players with LeBron, so the expectations are realistic. I think it's been a season-long job interview for Brandon Ingram on whether they want to keep him or move him. I think that's what this season has been about, developing those guys, seeing who he wants to be around them for the last 3 years on a title run. And just don't forget, man, no matter what seed they're, if they're able to, you know, get in the playoff, it's really hard to get that dude up out of there and playing in the series to beat him 4 times. And any teams down the slots in the West, the Lakers could be a huge problem because, man, that dude is just a monster. And this year he's not playing 38 minutes a game. The minutes are down. This groin injury will pass soon. And then you're dealing with a fresher than normal LeBron come playoff time. So, yeah, they can be a problem. I think the season has been a success so far despite all of, you know, the obstacles. But it is what it is until they get another max player in there. For now, you're just trying to win a series or two and then be happy. But all you Golden State people, be careful. Historically, when you play from June to June multiple years in a row, you start to have injuries right at playoff time. So it's nice to have your little Hampton Five, but let's see how many are standing when the season's over, because that's a lot of basketball.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right with that, and it's not only that. It's for the whole organization. Magic Johnson's looking at that organization. He's seeing, you know, the different players, how everything's going to shake out, who they're going to bring in next year, and also coaching. Who's going to be that head coach for the Lakers?
Yeah, I agree with you. Ingram was on the interview with Coach Walton.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
Yep.
Good call. Before the lady kicks us off, Rob, let's go ahead and end the show. Let's wrap it up, gentlemen.
Yeah, just to close it out, anytime you can get a healthy LeBron and Rajon Rondo on your team, it's going to bring some stability to your basketball team. So, obviously, the Lakers were playing much better basketball
And, you know, we've talked about this for LeBron, you know, the difference between he being on the team and not being on the team. We see that right now with Cleveland and the way they're playing without LeBron. We saw that when Miami left, when he left Miami, that they didn't make the playoffs. And you're seeing it now with the Lakers. So that just shows you the value of LeBron James. And then if you can add a seasoned vet, a champion, Rajon Rondo, to the mix as well, there's no doubt the Lakers will be better. With both of those players in the mix for the Lakers. How much better, as JQ said, we don't know, but they were definitely playing as a playoff basketball team when both of those guys were in the lineup for the Lakers. So I do expect them to get back into that mix. And then, you know, we'll see. If they make it to the second round of the playoffs, to me, that is a huge success. If they go to the first round and lose, not sure if, you know, if that's considered a successful season. But I think if they make it to the second round of the playoffs and they didn't bring in another max player, I think that should be considered a success for Magic Johnson and the Lakers. That being said, we thank you all for tuning in to our show, another edition with Talking Sports for the 12th Man. We'll be back on the air live on Super Bowl night. That's going to be Sunday night, February 3rd, right after the game, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific. Don't want to miss it. We'll get your recap. Recap the Super Bowl on the night of the game. And stay tuned. I'm working on my mock drafts, so don't I hadn't forgot about your fans. I'm working on the mock draft. We're getting time to that time of the year. I'm doing my homework, doing my studies. So my mock draft will be getting posted here really soon. Good night, people.
Yeah, absolutely. We appreciate you, I appreciate you not bringing in your perspective. It's always good to get some fresh blood and some fresh perspective in there. It's definitely a good conversation.
Yep.
And like I said, I'm a man of my word. If you turn out to be right, you call back in. I would totally eat crow right here.
Call in.
I appreciate y'all, fellas. And I will talk to y'all after the Super Bowl.
Yep. Last thing I was going to say.
You also
got to
call in and tell us if we were right too, Nas.
Keep it going. Hey, JQ, really quickly, JQ, are you going to be around for the Super Bowl experience or no? For that Tuesday, Wednesday or no? You got to be doing things or can you hang out or no?
Yeah, I'm going to try. I got a friend to be in town for that. So I will definitely be out and about. I will hit you up.
Hit me up, man.
Meet me downtown, man. We're going to corner the bottled water market. We're going to kick all them 15-year-olds out the way and we're going to make this money. Meet me downtown.
Are you serious, guys?
don't say that because I will text you, bro.
Hey, good night from out west. We appreciate you guys.
Good night, guys. We'll talk to you soon. See you guys. Hey, we'll talk to you soon for Super Bowl. Yeah, good night, guys.
Boy, you are a fool, guys.
Good night.
All right,
John. Yeah. Peace.